Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
How's it going, everybody? It's Wednesday, so that means it's time for the Famous Dead People podcast, the only podcast that resurrects famous people from the grave and asks them all the hard questions. I'm your host, Jarrett Berenstein, and we've got a great show for you today. Today we've got the author of Breakfast at Tiffany's and In Cold Blood, Truman Capote, and Selena Perez, the queen of Tejano music, Bitty Bitty Bum Bum, the woman who the movie Selena starring Jennifer Lopez was based on. A couple of quick announcements before we get to the episode proper. Don't forget that you only got a couple of more opportunities to see my improv team, Junior Varsity. If you are listening to this in 2019 and it is January, you got to come out. We're every Thursday, January 2019, 7 p.m. at the Magnet Theater. And then we're done. Then we're retired. So these are your last opportunities to come check us out. Don't forget, you can always check out the freshest episodes of Famous Dead People every Monday at 3 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. Email us at famousdeadpeople@radiofreebrooklyn.org. Buy my book, The Kellyanne Conway Technique. Rate and review the podcast. Tell your friends. Leave a comment. And of course, you can always check out my stuff at jarrettberenstein.com. But for now, sit back, relax, and enjoy Selena Perez and Truman Capote only on Famous Dead People.
Famous dead people.
It's time.
Famous dead people.
Time to start the show.
Famous dead people.
Famous dead people.
Famous dead
people, you know.
Famous dead people.
Famous dead people.
Famous
stories stuck in their heads.
Famous
you're gonna hear awful from me, even though all these people are dead.
My guests today on Famous Dead People are 20th century singer, songwriter, and actress known by many as the queen of Tejano music, Selena Quintilla Perez.
Hello, Jarrett. Don't worry about getting my name wrong.
I will get it wrong every time, probably.
I love it.
And American novelist and short story writer famous for works such as Breakfast at Tiffany's and the true crime novel In Cold Blood, Truman Capote.
Thank you for forgetting his
Truman
name
Capote.
Wrong.
Truman Capote.
Yes, thank you so much.
You guys both have such hard to pronounce names.
Thank you for doing that. It's a sign of solidarity, Jarrett.
Mr. Capote, Ms. Perez, thank you so much for joining us here on Famous Dead People.
Thank you so much for having me, Jarrett.
Let's start off with Truman Capote, if I may. So you were a prodigy of the written word. You taught yourself to read and to write. According to the Wikipedia, you decided very young that you were going to be a professional writer. But just based on what I know about your life, it seems like you loved being a socialite as much as you loved being a writer. And so I'm wondering, when you were young, were you actually in love with writing, or did you see writing even at that young age as a way to maybe work your way into celebrity and work your way into high society?
Well, my first love was being a jock.
Was being a jock?
Yes, I was a huge jock as a child.
Ooh. This is nowhere on your Wikipedia, Truman Capote.
Well, yes, it's very unknown. Mm-hmm. But I was a jock. I did baseball and soccer and mm-hmm. football. I was okay. the best in all of them.
Oh, wow.
So that was my first love.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, writing was always, you know, second best.
Gotcha.
But so, I did love to talk to people.
Okay, I have to imagine that something happened to eventually steer you away from a future as an athlete where I'm sure you would just be chugging beers and going to frat parties.
Did you ever pick on the nerds, Truman Capote?
No, I was very, very open-minded and nice.
Ooh, a progressive.
A progressive jock,
a progressive
Jared.
You don't see a lot
much
of
like
those.
Yourself.
Yeah. I'm a progressive jock.
Yeah, that's what I hear, Jared.
Wow, that is probably the
were
nicest
you not,
thing that anyone...
Were you on the ultimate frisbee team,
I was
Jared?
Not on the ultimate Ooh. Frisbee team. I was not really a sports guy growing up. I was more...
Oh, no.
I was in the theater department.
What a loser.
No.
Kind of a loser.
Did you pick on the lesser actor kids?
I don't think I did, but Truman Capote, where was that
sure.
progressive open-mindedness just now? You just threw a little bully at
oh,
me.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's the jock in me.
It
did rub off a bit. That's gotcha. What drove me out of sports.
Yeah. Tell me about, like, I think every jock has, like, their story of the big game where they won they caught the ball and they hit the end zone and everyone was chanting their name. Did you have anything like that, Truman Capote, when you were in high school?
Yes, I often hit the end zone.
Oh, wow.
There was a a big game between us and the Bulldogs.
The Bulldogs.
Oh, those bastard Bulldogs.
This was your high school rivals,
right,
of course.
Oh, of course. Yeah. The bastard Bulldogs. And we were down by 7 points.
Oh,
so
wow.
We had to score.
Which sport was this, by the way?
This was football.
Football, okay.
My best sport.
Gotcha. So one touchdown. You guys are down by one touchdown.
One touchdown.
Gotcha.
Yes. And the play was called the Capote. It was called the Capote.
Ooh, they were going to pull a Capote.
Yes, it was a secret weapon.
Mm.
I was so fast and so strong.
Yeah.
So I ran into the end zone and was blocked, but I just caught the ball. It was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Wow.
I know. What
and
a story.
What was the celebration like then afterwards?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. They put me on their shoulders. They ripped off my clothes.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yes. Go on.
It was just unbelievable. And that's, you know, I really found myself.
They ripped off all your clothes?
They ripped them all off. We were
Nikki.
Very close football team.
So they're hoisting you up on their shoulders.
And saying, Truman, Capote.
100% naked, Truman Capote.
Yes, it was a little embarrassing at first, but everyone just celebrated, and I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go with it.
Did you go a little crazy at the after party then?
Because
you were so hyped up from the win?
Well, that wasn't anything new. I was always a little crazy at the parties.
Did you have sex with the cheerleaders?
Ooh, yeah. The head shooter, maybe?
No. I wasn't really interested in them. I know.
See.
You know,
gotcha.
I don't know. It just wasn't my type of woman.
You know, you were a different kind of jock.
I was very different.
Different,
but everyone loved it. I was celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
Very progressive.
So then what was the moment where you made your switch then from athletics to the written word?
Well, I liked being celebrated, but I didn't love having my clothes ripped off and all the adulation. I kind of liked having some alone time. And with writing, I could do that alone. It'd be celebrated later.
I see.
My clothes are nice. I don't want them ripped apart.
Yeah, so people were just tearing your clothes off left and right.
All the time.
And that was a sports thing specifically.
Well, it started that way.
Yeah.
But then they started just doing it all the time because they thought I loved it so much.
I see.
And they were kind of right.
This would make sense because, like, I know at my high school and my college, this was not a tradition to rip the clothes off.
To rip the clothes?
Rip every shred of clothes off
of. Oh, I guess it was my school.
The MVP.
Mine was, but it was for the losers, Jerry.
Oh, the losers.
Yes, the losers in Tijuana would always get their clothes ripped up and asked to leave town immediately.
And
but it was more extreme, I think, than the American high schools. We had rivalries, but we would sacrifice pigs and hang them. We would sneak into their schools and hang pigs in the main lobby of their schools.
The day
of a game to give them a scare. And sometimes the teams would not even show up, but Jared, because they were so scared.
They were so terrified.
They
That's
were
some
so
good
scared.
Tactics.
But we found them. But we found them.
Yikes.
But I played volleyball.
You did volleyball.
I played volleyball.
Mm.
All the prettiest girls play volleyball. I don't know
of
about
course.
You guys, but I feel like
you don't even have to be good at
volleyball.
You played volleyball.
Yes, I did.
We have volleyball that in common. And it was because I did it because I was the prettiest girl in school,
mm-hmm.
and all of the pretty girls and all of the pretty girls played volleyball instead. The pretty girls did not go to cheerleading, and they didn't do the ultimate frisbee, and they pretty much all went to volleyball.
Well, this is what it was like in my high school.
And soccer, Jared.
And soccer also.
Yes.
In my high school, the volleyball team, there were no rules to volleyball. There was no referee or anything. It was basically just like a big fashion show.
Anarchy.
You know? Yeah, it was just we put the most attractive people in the school on the volleyball team.
Oh, okay.
And then, they'd toss the ball around. They'd make up some points at the end, you know? And like whoever won or whoever lost, we all enjoyed looking at these really attractive people. That's, as far as I know, that's what the sport of volleyball is,
right?
More or less, Jared.
More or less.
To get back to the point,
mm-hmm.
I stopped playing football because I also didn't like all the jostling and getting
all
tackled.
The jostling.
It hurt my head. It hurt my hip.
Yeah.
I didn't like being jostled.
And you were so good at it, though. You know,
being jostled?
It really is such a shame.
It is a shame.
Let's move over to Selena for just a moment.
Selena, you
are one of the most celebrated Mexican-American entertainers of all time.
Gracias.
Of course, despite having your life tragically cut short
Gracias.
At the age of 23.
Gracias.
You did start your career very early, though.
Yes, I did.
I read on your Wikipedia.
Nueve años.
So 9 years old, you're playing in a band at your father's restaurant, which I read on the Wikipedia was named Papageos.
The best.
Now, what was the reaction? So people are eating at your father's restaurant, Papageos, and they look over and they see a band of basically like all children playing for
them. Which were Los Lonely Boys.
Los Lonely Boys.
Which turned into Los Lonely Boys.
What do you mean? Los Lonely Boys.
You remember Jared, how far from heaven.
Yes, yes.
Wait too long. You know Los Lonely Boys?
It was the
number one song in the planet Earth.
Is that a song or is that a band, Los Lonely Boys?
Los Lonely Boys was a band. When my first band at my father's restaurant was the Los Lonely Boys. After they played for me, they broke up and became Los Lonely Boys and then went away and then came back and made Despacito.
Wait, so you were a part of this band, which I read on the Wikipedia was named Selena y Los Dinos, which is like Selena and the Boys.
Right.
You know, and so then you decided to go.
But when I left, they became so lonely,
Jerry. They became the Lonely Boys. That's adorable.
And they only sang about how long it took to get to heaven. Jared.
All those poor boys.
And they wanted to know how many miles it was to heaven.
Did people...
And so did the world.
50,000.
What was the reaction to seeing this band of children playing for them while they're eating? Was this a positive thing? Did they enjoy it?
Los Lonely Boys went on the stage and played without me.
Mm-hmm.
It was commonplace to see huge tecates being thrown at the band because it was so horrible.
It was typical.
It was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
The Los Lonely Boys couldn't sing. A lot of the songs that you hear from the Los Lonely Boys now are auto-tuned. But back in the day, it was horrible singing. And so people would throw, they'd order enchiladas, they'd order, you know, rice and beans, and they'd pick it up without even taking a mouthful, and they'd Kevin Spacey pick up the plate, sort of blank faced, and then they'd throw it at them.
There's
like
a reference,
that,
of course, to the movie American Beauty. Yeah.
And it was chaos most nights. People would come to throw stuff at the band.
Oh, so maybe
it became a thing around town. This is the only place you can go to throw stuff at children at the Los Niños. But then my father, he said, Celine, please go on there. You can see, I hear you sing in the bathroom all the time. Please go on stage and try to save my kids. There's open glass. They're breaking the bottles before they're throwing it at the kids now.
Wait, let's walk this back for just a moment.
Okay,
so your father says, Selena, I know that you've been singing in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
were you
like embarrassed? Were you scared of singing in public at first? Was singing in the bathroom the only place where you could express yourself?
Yes,
wow.
Yes, it was.
And so when your father said, "I've been listening, I've been hearing you singing in the bathroom,"
how
what was
creepy.
Your reaction?
Mm-hmm.
Well, some people would think it was creepy, and they'd be right to think it was creepy.
Yes, very creepy.
Because we had a big house. We had a very big hacienda. A lot of people think I grew up, because it's a very racist thing to think that I grew up in a small place. But I grew up in a very big hacienda. He had an entire bathroom to himself and to his, you know, he had a bedroom bathroom.
And you're like, Dad, if I wanted to be heard, I would have sang in your bathroom. But I was in my bathroom because I didn't want anybody to know that I'm a singer. Yeah.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Oh,
yeah, so
that's
your father says, I've heard you singing, Selena.
I've heard you singing,
and
Selena.
I know that you have a beautiful voice, and so come sing in the band.
So go come sing in the band and save your brothers from from getting cut up by my patrons.
Oh, my.
And so I did, and I went on stage.
To save their lives, obviously, because you don't want
to save their lives,
sing.
And I begged them. I said, please, patrons, please stop throwing food and drink at my brothers. And I started saying, and they were like, you sing. And the first thing that came into my mind, biddy biddy bamba. It was just like, it was just sort of, you know, sort of stream of consciousness, Jerry.
Wow.
You know, when you sort of are given a microphone and then people say, just talk into the microphone. Mm-hmm. And you just sort of come up with whatever you want. So I start dancing and I go, biddy biddy bamba, da bamba, biddy biddy bamba.
This would eventually become a huge Selena hit, biddy biddy bamba.
That's right. What were you scatting?
International. Yes, because I had actually been a huge fan of Scatman Crothers before I had taken the gig.
Scatman Crothers, the actor who never scatted, I believe.
Uh-huh.
I think he was just an actor.
I think he was
actor,
in The Shining.
Right.
I think he was in The Shining.
Yeah,
he was,
movie.
But I don't
I was
think,
inspired by you.
I don't think he ever scatted, though.
I was inspired by the name.
It's in the name.
I was inspired by the name, Jerry.
Well, that is
to have a name like that and never do the thing that you're advertised to do.
I could be wrong.
I thought if he can do it, I can.
I will have to have him on the show. This is a vocal reminder to Jarrett Berenstein to book Scatman Crothers on the next episode if you can get him. If you're just joining us, this is Famous Dead People on Radio Free Brooklyn, and my guests today are American novelist and short story writer Truman Capote. I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Capote.
Okay. And 20th century singer and actress Selena Perez.
Bidi bidi bamba. Hello. Don't get my last name wrong.
Indeed. It's not your last name. It's your maiden name that I have so much trouble with. Mm-hmm. Quintanilla.
We'll get it by the end of the pod.
I think so. So let's go back to Truman Capote for just a moment. Okay. So I'd like to ask you about one of your early jobs. So you're 19 years old. It's 1943. You begin working as a copy boy in the art department of The New Yorker. You held the job for 2 years, but then in 1945, you get fired for getting into a fight with the poet Robert Frost. This is on the Wikipedia.
That son of a bitch.
Yeah, what did you do that made Robert, a beloved American poet Robert Frost, two roads diverge in a yellow wood.
Exactly.
And sorry I could not travel both. Mm-hmm. What did you do to anger him that so much that he demanded that you be fired?
I just tried to give him a few pointers.
On his writing?
Yes.
Okay.
And he did not like that.
Gotcha.
And he never liked that. I kept doing it. I thought he'd get used to it.
Oh, so there wasn't just one incident between you and Robert Frost.
What's that poem? Whose woods these are, I think I know. Something like that. Terrible. Yeah. Terrible.
And he ends it by saying, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep.
Whatever. I don't even. All I know is that it was not exactly right. And I tried to help him. He would never listen. He would just throw me off like I was some kind of loser.
Well, what were some of the suggestions that you were making?
I knew the woods.
You knew the woods.
And so I was like, a lot of people are going to know the woods. They're going to think you're just full of shit. And what really was an impetus is I once spilled tea all over his desk.
Oh, my God.
On purpose.
So, on purpose.
Yes. That was my way of getting back. I tried to make it look like an accident, but he saw me throw it down.
So you're saying, Robert Frost, I'm reading your poems. You're saying, I don't know. I think I know whose woods these are. And you're saying, no, you should just know.
I didn't know who. You should just know whose woods they are. I know the woods. I mean, who doesn't know their woods? Am I right?
Yeah, of course.
I love the woods.
See, everyone knows the woods.
I love the woods.
What about, did you have any suggestions for two roads diverged in Yellowwood?
I wanted to make it three roads.
Three roads instead.
Yeah.
Interesting. And what would you call that? That's like 33% better of a poem then.
Right.
If you add one more wood to it.
He was not very open to suggestion. Mm. And you have to be if you're a writer. God knows I know that.
Mm-hmm. So you would always be open to suggestions then, Truman Capote?
Sometimes.
Okay, gotcha.
I mean, you know, when you're getting it from the best, you have to listen to the
best. Gotcha. If it's someone who's clearly better than you, as you were saying, you were better than Robert Frost.
I tried to tell him that.
Gotcha. Don't know why he wouldn't be amenable to that note from a 21-year-old boy.
Crusty asshole.
Yeah.
He was a crusty asshole.
So then you purposefully spill tea on his desk to say, fuck you, Robert Frost.
I'll show you, you crusty asshole. And he saw me do it, and he got really mad. He slapped me across the face, which I should have called the police right there and then.
Of course.
He slapped me right across the face. I went to slap him, and he caught me.
Caught my
hand in the arm, punched me in the stomach, and I got fired.
Oh, my God.
Can you believe this harassment?
That's incredible. No. Now, I know that you were so fast and strong from your years as an athlete, Truman Capote.
Yeah, he didn't know what he was in for.
How fast and strong must Robert Frost have been to have caught your hand and then landed that punch in your stomach?
You know, that man is superhuman.
It's Robert Frost.
He must have been.
Wow.
Because I lifted my arm to slap him right back, and he caught it.
He caught that arm, too?
Yeah, he caught it.
Oh, my God.
And so I didn't know what I was in for with that physical abuse.
Oh, my goodness.
And I couldn't handle it. I just couldn't handle it. I started screeching like a ferret.
Oh my goodness. I was humiliated. Wow.
It's a good thing they fired me, because I would have burned that place down.
You would burn the New Yorker down.
Burn that place down. Who would have missed it?
That's incredible.
It was
not
horrible.
Me.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Selena.
Not me.
And who knows more about editorial stuff than Selena?
You know,
if
I had gotten into a fight with such a famous and beloved American poet,
he's okay.
Robert Frost.
He's all right.
Robert Frost.
He's fine.
He's one of the most beloved American poets of all time.
Well, I mean, yes, that's because there's not very many.
Mm-hmm. They're okay. Well, yeah. So here's the thing.
Touché.
I would have told everybody that story. I would have been like, you are not going to believe this, but I got into a fight with Robert Frost.
Well,
I just never would have guessed that he'd be so easy to anger also.
Oh, my God.
Based on the kind of poetry that he writes.
A very angry, angry man.
Oh, were there other incidences with Robert Frost?
He was always yelling at me. Physical abuse, slapping me.
Can you give us an example of something that Robert Frost once yelled at you?
Yes. Well, I told you, when I tried to correct some of his... Well, just give him a few pointers.
Mm-hmm.
He told me... Okay, this is horrible.
Okay.
This is horrible.
All right.
He said, I'm not going to take advice from some mouse-nosed little bitch.
Whoa, hey. Robert Frost said that?
A mouse-nosed? What
Robert
the hell
Frost
is he even talking about?
Called you, Truman Capote, a mouse-nosed little bitch.
Have you ever heard such an absurdity?
Oh, God, that
a
is...
A similar thing happened to me when I did karaoke with Roberto Frost.
I'm sorry, what?
Well, I knew him as Roberto Frost.
This can't possibly be the same Robert Frost.
In disguise.
Well, I didn't think he was because he had a great big mustache.
Okay.
But now hearing your story, it does sound like it was the same.
Oh my God.
I was doing karaoke with a Roberto Frost in Tijuana. And, you know, I walk in. This was the height of my fame.
Mm-hmm.
I'd walk in and I'm like, I'll do karaoke for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I come in and I start singing my song, Bitty Bitty Bamba. Oh,
everybody must have gone crazy.
And
then.
It was pandemonium, Jared.
Did they rip your clothes off?
And they, well, I ripped my own clothes off for the fans. But Roberto comes in, he starts singing, and he starts singing the wrong notes. And so I say, you know, it just kind of helps if you have more fun with it, Roberto, instead of trying to do it accurately. And he punched me through a window.
Oh my God.
He punched me through a window.
People must have been furious.
And I screamed, guards. Back then I had pretty good, you know, guards.
Pretty good guards?
Pretty good guards.
I got a question.
Pretty good guards, I thought. And so I said, guards. And he put all of my guards in the hospital.
Oh my God.
Did he call them a mouse-nosed little bitch? That would be the giveaway.
Yeah. If he used the same insult, I think we could assume that it was the same Robert Frost.
It has to be.
But was it not the same insult?
Well, he called me a mouse-nosed punta, which I think is dirtier.
Very
Spanish
suspicious.
For whore, I believe.
Oh,
yes.
I could be wrong
How
about
dare
that.
Dare he?
Yes.
Puton? It doesn't matter. Puton. I know French more than I know Spanish.
Oui.
That is unbelievable. So this crowd is being treated to, it's as though Mick Jagger were going to do karaoke. That's how insane. Because it's the height of popularity. And then some guy who looks like a really old Robert Frost, but wearing a big mustache.
Huge.
Who introduced himself as Roberto Frost, decides to sing with you. And nobody for that, that would have been, you know, strikes number 1, 2, and 3 for me. I would have been like, get off stage. Selena's up there.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
But I tried to help.
And then when you try to help him out, he punches you through a window.
Like I said, he's not open to suggestions.
Wow. I'm surprised that he got out of there alive. You know, I'm sure the crowd must have rioted at that point.
But he put all of them in the hospital.
Everybody in the hospital.
Very
your bodyguards and
mis
everybody
bodyguards,
that was watching.
Mis amigos.
Oh my goodness.
Los niños. Los Sony boys.
Now, just based on what happens in your life later on, Selena, it doesn't seem like your bodyguards are really earning that paycheck. But let's...
Okay.
Did you pay them?
It's okay. Well, my father paid them. I'm not writing checks, but I think they're making a cool $500,000. I think most of them.
Oh. $500,000.
Yeah.
They were not earning that paycheck. Let's go back to Selena for just a moment. So your first band, as we discussed, Selena y los Dinos. Selena and the Guys. So you start touring with them when you're in middle school. Your father frequently taking you out of school so that you could do shows, and I understand that your teachers tried to intervene and say, Selena needs to be in school. It's very important for her to get her education. And your dad tells them, mind your business.
Mind your beeswax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so is
you
that...
You broke motherfuckers.
That's what he said. Wow. Was there more?
There was more. Yeah. He pulled me out of middle school one day And I flip my hair back and I go, see you, boys. I'm going on the road. And I invented the peace sign back then. You know how everyone does peace signs now?
Oh, yeah?
I invented that.
Oh, wow.
And everyone does them.
I flip my hair. I go, see you later, boys. Try to buy tickets. That's the only time you can ask me out on dates. And the teacher goes, no, Selena, you have to stay here. And my father goes, shut your fucking mouth, you broke motherfucker.
Whoa.
And he goes, how much do you make in uno año? And... And the teacher sort of looks down at her feet and she whispers, 25,000.
What?
And he goes, and
that's just some numbers in Spanish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes, escucha, I can't hear you. And the teacher goes, 25,000 años.
A
year. 25,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And my father, I had signed my first record contract, so mm-hmm. And they gave me an advance of, well over that, $300,000.
Much more than a teacher's salary. Right.
Much more than a teacher's salary, mm-hmm. which my father was handling the money, so he had a lot on him.
Okay.
And he goes, fantastic. And he pulls out, and he puts his thumb deep into his mouth
mm-hmm.
and licks out $25,000.
He just licks it out?
He licks it out of his pocket, and he goes, fantastic, buy yourself a gun. and he throws it on the ground, and he goes, Selena, now we go. I was so proud of my father in that moment. He was always using my money to insult people publicly and intimidate people into advancing my career.
And your dad did not know how much a gun cost also, because it's $25,000 for one gun. That'll be a nice one.
Very generous.
Now, I did read, because you were so young, and everybody
Thank
in the band
you.
Was so young, apparently.
Thank you.
Also, that you were sometimes refused bookings
yes.
because of how young you were and
yes.
how young your other bandmates were.
Yes.
Well, let's walk me through this, because I know
yes.
that you were like 16, 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
How old was everybody else in the band? How old were Los Dinos, the
Los
boys?
Lonely Boys were 42.
42?
42.
My goodness. Wow.
But they didn't look it. They didn't look it. They looked
okay.
like they looked like they were about 20, 21, 22.
Okay.
But they were well
Which is
over,
normal.
But they
That's
were well
normal.
Over 40.
That is a normal age for a band to be playing.
But they were
yeah.
well over 40.
Okay.
And they would play for me. And I did get kicked out of a lot of places mm-hmm. in the early days, much like Michael Jackson's father. They would book me at strip clubs. I tried to play at Scores one time
oh
in
God.
New York.
Wow. Oh, I didn't
the Playboy Mansion.
The Playboy Mansion?
The Playboy Mansion, yes. I got
wow.
booked on that.
Your
early.
Father decided to have his 16-year-old daughter play music at the Playboy Mansion.
Jay.
And it was really letting the chickens do a show
really,
for the foxhole.
Really? Jay. Like Joe Jackson.
Jays in the police. And then so I pulled up to the Playboy Mansion
mm-hmm.
and the LAPD are waiting for me at the mansion because they hear.
Mm-hmm.
They hear.
And so they go, excuse me, how old is this this girl? And my father, he goes, she is 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And the cop goes, well, she's not stepping foot on that property. And my father goes, oh, really? Well, how much exactly do you make in a year?
Oh, no.
And the cop sort of looks down at his feet.
He's
and he
playing
goes,
the hits.
And he goes, $25,000.
Wait, so this cop in Los Angeles, where the Playboy Mansion is giving his salary in Spanish. Okay.
There's a lot of Spanish-speaking people in Los Angeles.
That's
I don't
true.
Know if you've been.
A lot of
I don't know,
Spanish
I don't know,
police
I don't know,
officers,
I don't know if
too.
You've been here, but there's
That's
quite
true.
A lot of Mexicanos in there.
That's true.
And so he looks at his shoes and he goes, $25,000 per año. And he goes, oh, fantastic. Selena, can you hand me that briefcase? And I hand him a briefcase, and he just like unfurls. He dumps the whole thing out, and he goes, hey, why don't you guys buy yourself some new guns? Kicks open the gate, Hugh Hefner, and they welcome us with open arms.
Oh, that must have been a standing
while the
ovation.
Cops spend the rest
wow.
of the night trying to pick up the money on
That's,
the ground.
They're like, oh,
because the wind's blowing the money. So
we really
like,
need this money so we can buy ourselves a couple of guns.
A couple of new guns.
They didn't have guns back then, I guess.
That's
that
right.
is an
It was pathetic to see them on the ground picking up the money.
Unbelievable
like
story.
I
and
like
I mean,
that.
Yeah, just like your father really seems to have that shtick handled. You know, it's like, nah,
yeah.
I know how to shut people up. Throw a little money at them. Tell them to buy a gun with it.
It works.
Give them a year's worth of their salary.
Why
Jared?
Change what works? Unfortunately, we've got to take a short break. But we will be right back with Selena Perez and Truman Capote on Famous Dead People. Stay with us.
Hey, everybody, just want to take a quick break to remind you to subscribe to Famous Dead People on iTunes or whatever app you are using to listen to podcasts. Rate us 5 stars, leave a comment, tell your friends. All that stuff helps us out a ton. And feel free to hit us up at famousdeadpeople@radiofreebrooklyn.org if you want a specific famous dead person on the show, or if you have any comments that you want to shoot over to us. Whatever, we love hearing from fans. Also, check out my book, The Kellyanne Conway Technique. It is out now. It is hilarious. I hope that you will check that out and read that and leave reviews, awesome reviews on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or whatever, and tell your friends to read it because it's super funny and I want that money. Also, go check out jaredberenstein.com for all the latest on my show dates and up-to-date project information. And lastly, if you really like Famous Dead People and you want to send us some money to help keep the show on the air, go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/famousdeadpeople and click on the Support This Show button. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the podcast.
Welcome back to Famous Dead People on Radio Free Brooklyn. Famous Dead People, the only show that resurrects famous people from the grave and asks them all the hard questions. I am your host, Jarrett Berenstein, and we are here every Monday at 3 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. My guests in the studio today are American novelist and short story writer famous for works such as Breakfast at Tiffany's and the true crime novel In Cold Blood, Truman Capote.
Thank you for having me.
And 20th century singer, songwriter, and actress known by many as the queen of Tejano music, Selena Quintanilla. Shit.
We're going to get it by the end of the pod, Jenny.
Queen,
thank you for having me.
Selena Quintanilla Perez.
Quintanilla Perez. Welcome from Tijuana.
I also love how you keep on welcoming me from Tijuana when you were born in Texas. When you spent most of your life in Texas. So let's go back to Truman Capote for just a moment. So you wrote your first novel, Summer Crossing, sometime in the 1940s. It's the story of a romance between a New York City socialite and a parking lot attendant.
Yes.
Now, the novel was only discovered in 2004 because you claimed during your life to have destroyed the manuscript, but then it was a copy was eventually found. Why didn't you like Summer Crossing? Why did you attempt to have it destroyed?
You're not going to believe this.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it.
But it was that crusty asshole, Robert Frost. He told me
it was horrible.
And I believed him. See, unlike Robert Frost, I'm very open to suggestion and criticism.
As you mentioned before, yes.
I think he was just jealous. And he just knew it was going to be a hit.
Now, I have to ask. So you have this tumultuous relationship, very contentious relationship between you and Robert Frost.
Mm-hmm.
He gets you fired from The New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few years later, you finish your first novel, Summer Crossing.
Right.
And you decide to give it to Robert Frost to read and give you notes on?
Yes.
Why?
Well, because we had become pretty good friends by then.
So, okay.
We kissed and made up.
You kissed?
Literally.
How soon after this fight did you guys kiss and make up?
Oh, it took a few weeks.
A couple weeks later.
I realized that I was in the wrong with spilling tea on his desk.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have done that. That was absurd.
Gotcha.
That was absurd. But he got me fired,
mm-hmm.
and that was absurd as well. So
okay.
I called him. I had someone deliver a telegram saying, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. It was a singing telegram.
Okay.
And it was they were like, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I don't remember how it really went, but it was a good one. And then he sent me a telegram, and we got together for tea, of all
mm-hmm.
things.
He sent you a singing telegram back,
yes,
obviously.
Yes, he did. It was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And we got together for tea, which I thought was very cute.
Mm-hmm.
The tea that I spilled.
Because you spilled the tea on his desk, yeah.
But I think it was all just an act, because he earned my trust. Then he saw my book,
mm-hmm.
got scared there was going to be too big of a hit,
mm-hmm.
and told me it was garbage.
Wow.
And I believed him.
That is unbelievable.
I believed him.
I can't believe Robert Frost played this con on you.
Especially since he's not even a novelist.
He's not a novelist, no.
Did you kiss?
Did you guys kiss then afterwards?
Did he kiss you and then lie?
I couldn't kiss him after he told me my book was bad. I was heartbroken.
Oh.
I didn't get out of bed for days.
Mm. So this had nothing to do with how you actually felt about the book. Like, you think it was a great book,
I thought it was going to be a huge hit.
Gotcha. Tell us a little bit more about it. So it's this New York socialite. Is it the Wikipedia doesn't have the sex of these people, and obviously it's 2018, that really doesn't matter, but just for my own curiosity.
Yes.
So New York socialite, man or woman, parking lot attendant, man or woman.
Oh, the socialite was the gay man.
Okay.
And there's a parking lot attendant was, of course, a gay man.
A gay boy. Okay.
But I purposely didn't put the sexes there because in that time it was not very acceptable.
Oh, so in the book you don't even know the sexes?
Nope.
Oh, wow.
All they and it.
Interesting.
And, you know,
wow.
Very you know, androgynous.
It's very forward-thinking and also kind of like a little mysterious.
I was scared, okay? I was just scared.
Intriguing.
Wouldn't
people
be like, accepted.
I don't know how to picture these characters then if I don't know what their sex is.
Well,
I'm sure that would have made it a smash success.
I had to spend my life acting very straight.
You spent your life acting straight.
Of course.
That's interesting.
Nobody knew my secret.
You know, I read on the Wikipedia that you were open about your sexuality, but you're saying that you were trying to keep it secret.
Well, I was open to my close friends and family.
Oh, gotcha.
But nobody else knew. Nobody knew.
I was going to suggest, like, maybe you were just that bad at concealing it.
Excuse me.
It looked like you were proud of your sexuality and open about it.
I was a jock.
You were a jock.
I know how to hide stuff.
Okay. But here's the thing. Maybe you were just so good at sports that everybody was like, you know what? I know it's the 1940s, but I think we can start developing our attitudes towards homosexual people and accept Truman Capote. I mean, he's so good at football, guys.
Well, that could be. Everyone did love me in my hometown. They didn't care. In fact, I think I did a lot for gay people in my hometown.
Gotcha. Oh, that's nice.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So let's talk about your other... you're technically your first novel then is Other Voices, Other Rooms.
Yes.
Okay, because you famously destroyed your first novel because Robert Frost, who you were kind of secret enemies with, told you that it was bad and then you guys kissed.
Frenemies.
So part of the success of your first novel was your author photo. And I read about this on the Wikipedia. There's an entire section on the Wikipedia just about this author photo and
how it was very scandalous.
It was a splash.
Scandalous.
You know? And so the photo is, and I encourage anybody listening to this to Google it.
Please.
It is just you lounging on what looks like to be a sofa.
Mm-hmm.
And you are staring. You're staring intently into the camera. And it looks to me like a very normal author photo.
Do you think so?
I really think it looks like a very normal author photo.
Well,
you know, but it just blew people's minds.
I love that photo.
What is wrong with it? What is the thing that really gripped people?
People.
It was so scandalous at the time.
People thought it was a very seductive look on my face. Now, I will say, I was very young. I look very good.
Yes, that
very,
is true.
You know, twinky. Mm-hmm. And staring into the camera, and you know, it wasn't a headshot. My whole body was in the shot, and I had a nice
you can
body.
See down to your midsection.
And I had
could
a nice
you
body.
See it
just below?
Could you see the whole thing?
I was fully clothed.
What do you mean the whole thing,
fully
Selena?
Clothed?
Please, you should check it out.
Was this after a football game?
No. My football days were behind me.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's wearing
scandal,
his clothes and he's just looking into the camera.
The scandal was that they assumed I was being seductive, which, hey, I think that says more about them than me.
I kind of feel like this is like that thing where Elvis swinging his hips, like we don't think of it as scandalous anymore, but back then they were like, oh my God, how dare you?
People were such prudes.
So like back then, were people just like not looking into the camera? Is that was that the scandal
back
then?
I didn't judge my own actions by other people. But,
okay.
I mean, you just had to have a blasé, stupid, boring, ugly photo for authors. And I wasn't about to do
you
that.
You decided to switch gears.
I'm young. I'm hip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in shape.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to show it up, baby.
What were you trying to communicate by staring into the camera and giving that photo?
That I'm single and ready to mingle. Give me a call, Truman Capote.
Did you get many dates from the photo, Truman?
Not as many as I'd hoped.
Oh, Dios mio.
They were turned off by the freaking scandal.
That is a real shame.
Ruined it.
So let's move over to Selena for just a moment. So your third album, you know, you're climbing the charts. You're on a rocket ship to success.
Gracias.
Your third album is a nuclear bomb.
Oh my God.
It is a 10 times platinum album.
Gracias.
You end up booking this giant press tour for the album that is already enormous success through Monterey, Mexico. But this was a concern for the label because, and this is something I didn't know until I read the Wikipedia.
They may or may not be true.
But they're not going to put that. I'm sure they censored that out of the Wikipedia.
I hope so.
I see. But that
I'm
you
sure they have somebody
spoke
that does that.
Very, very little Spanish.
That's weird. You sound like a native speaker.
I do not know the language.
Oh, no.
I don't know it.
Aye, aye, aye.
And I don't care. No. I don't want to know it either.
You go, girl.
Because, yeah, so your first album was mostly in Spanish, but you had to learn those words phonetically. That's on the Wikipedia.
That's right, yeah. Memorization. Yeah. I have no idea what some of the words that I sang meant.
You probably don't even know what the songs are about.
I have no idea. Yeah. But I don't care.
Who cares?
I don't care. I couldn't care less. But people, sometimes I would do shows in Monterey, and people, I would be like, "Eh, gracias, thank you," and the big climax of the song, I go, "Thank you, goodbye, Monterey. You can talk to me after the show."
Anoche.
Anoche, and I don't know what that is. I mean, maybe why not say that?
I don't.
Sometimes
even know.
I go to restaurants and I say anoche, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'll have dos.
I'll have dos la cucarachas, you know, and. And so, and people, fans would come up to me and they would bang on my bus, you know, bang on my bus. And so, I remember one time I opened the window and I was like, I said, La Hacienda es Los Gatos.
What?
Because my father said, you know, that's some words. That's some words to say.
Those are words.
And my fans, tsunami of fans outside the bus going, do you know what you're saying? Do you know what you're saying to us?
The fans were saying this in unison together.
Wow.
And so they had planned it.
Do you know what you're saying? Do you know what you're saying?
I can see it.
In English.
I can see it now.
In English.
Now, here's the thing. On the Wikipedia, it says that the press tour was a huge success.
And that
the Mexican media hailed you as an artist of the people. How did you manage to create that impression, even though, as we're discovering,
you didn't know the language.
Very little, if any, Spanish.
I speak none of it, Jared.
Zero Spanish.
Zero.
Wow.
Every time, this is what I think people in America call the luckiest break of all time.
Oh.
Because sometimes, you know, when you are playing a sport but when you're doing something and you just sort of feel yourself cooking and everything just sort of falls in line perfectly and you're like, Jesus,
how is this
Jesus
happening?
Christo, how did that happen to me? I did some memorization, but we're talking from, I think, 2 whole years straight. I memorized the songs, and then when people asked me questions in Espanol, which I've memorized that, I would make up, much like I did Bidi Bidi Bamba, I just sort of whatever came out of my mouth turned out to be correct in the moment.
Perfect Spanish.
Turned out to be exactly what I needed to say.
Unbelievable.
And imagine that. Imagine if you had been correct 3 times in a row, you know, speaking a language correctly, you'd probably say that, I guess it's in my bones. I think I got it now. And so I did what I consider to be the longest riff of all time. A 2-year riff.
2 years straight.
2-year straight riff.
Faking
Spanish. A Bidi Bidi Bamba. 2-year straight riff.
Perfect somehow.
An extended Bidi Bidi Bamba.
You know, I can't help but notice that you have the consonants, the accent, the word choice of somebody who English is their second language.
That's why I'm so confused.
I don't know. It's easier, Jared.
What is your first language, Selena? Just
my
out of curiosity.
My first language is the language of love, Jared. The language
she
of love.
She is fluent in the
international language.
That's beautiful.
The love, Jared.
For those of you who are just joining us, this is Famous Dead People on Radio Free Brooklyn, and my guests today are 20th century singer and actress Selena Perez.
Goodbye, Jared.
And American novelist and short story writer Truman Capote.
Hello, Jared.
Please don't say goodbye, Selena. We have a solid 16 minutes left for the show today. So let's go back over to Truman Capote for just a moment. So your next big hit after your novel was Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, yes.
Which is a short novel plus a few short stories. The short story, Breakfast at Tiffany's, the novella Breakfast at Tiffany's is what the movie was based on. The movie, of course, wildly different from the novella being much darker and with much stronger language. So the story was originally supposed to run in Harper's Bazaar, but they eventually decided against it for fear that the content and language was unsuitable, and they were worried that Tiffany's, the retailer, would pull their advertising. So would you mind telling the listeners who might not be familiar with the novella version of Breakfast at Tiffany's, what exactly was so objectionable about the original story that Harper's decided to pull it from their magazine?
This is difficult for me.
Oh, is this a sensitive subject for you, Truman Capote?
No. I was banned from Tiffany's.
You were banned from Tiffany's?
Yes.
Because the jeweler.
Because of what happened. Oh, and I was a regular customer there. So I was applying for a job at Tiffany's. The one here in New York City. You're familiar.
Yes, of course.
By Trump Tower.
But let me ask you, just
please,
right off the gun.
Go for it.
You're a writer, Truman Capote.
Well, yeah.
You're a writer. But you are you doing looking for a job at Tiffany's, the jeweler?
Please, you should know, of all people, that writing, you know, until you really hit it big. You've got to have that regular job. You have to have some survival job.
Survivor job.
And I thought, who knows more about jewelry than me, Truman Capote? So I went in.
Dripping with jewels.
Well, you had your
drip on.
They were mostly fake. They were what I could afford.
Of course.
I went in there and I was running late, so I brought in my McMuffin. I brought in my breakfast.
Okay, hence, your McMuffin.
Hence the name Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Gotcha. Oh, okay.
Makes perfect sense. And they did not like me eating in Tiffany's.
Okay.
They hated it.
This was while you were working there?
No.
I
went in applying for a job.
Gotcha, you're eating your breakfast.
I was never lucky
ready for
to
the
be
interview.
Hired.
Yeah.
The interview did not go well. I went in there. And I had my sausage McMuffin. It was crumbling all over the place. Wasn't made very well. And they weren't open to suggestion either. But I had my McMuffin and my coffee. And I said, hello, I'm Truman Capote. You know me. And I would like to work here at Tiffany's. I mean, you're lucky. It's your lucky day. Truman Capote walks in. He wants to work at Tiffany's. And they said, sir, you're not allowed to eat in here. And I said, you son of a bitch.
Oh, my God.
And I threw my sausage McMuffin in the person's face.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, you know me. I'm Truman Capote.
I wrote Other Rooms, Other Voices.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have no idea who you're messing with. And then they slapped me across the face
with her
fake nails and all. And it cut me. It cut me. And I cried. And I ran.
Again, Truman
Capote. I'm a fighter.
You were such
an
athlete, so strong and fast. How fast and strong this random woman who worked at Tiffany's have been to have landed the slap on you?
Well, my football days were far behind.
Of course, but you don't lose those instincts, Truman Capote.
Well, I had slowed down quite a bit. I hadn't been working out.
Muscle memory.
It was horrible. In fact,
it was even
difficult to tell you. It's difficult to remember because I was banned from Tiffany's, and I loved Tiffany's.
So then did you decide to write Breakfast at Tiffany's as sort of a revenge on Tiffany's?
I tell the truth and tell the movie, and then I changed everything.
And so the short story you're saying is just the story of you going to Tiffany's and trying to eat your breakfast and getting slapped in the face.
I'm trying to get a job.
I had
my breakfast, and she was very rude to me.
Yes.
And I said, you don't know who you're messing with. Threw my sausage McMuffin. Didn't go over well.
Gotcha.
She had cut my cornea with her fake nail.
Oh, my goodness.
No.
Can you imagine? I had to go to Mount Sinai.
You need those.
Oh, you had to go to the hospital.
It was a horrible day.
That's incredible. Harper's thought that this was too dark of a story for them.
Yes.
This is the story of a man who goes to Tiffany's, eats his breakfast, gets told, hey, you can't eat in here, throws it in the woman's face. The woman slaps him in the face. He has to go to the hospital.
Do you think I overreacted?
I think you might have overreacted, but I also think Harper's might have overreacted because that's not that dark of a story.
Well, they could not risk losing Tiffany as an advertiser.
What was the strongest language in that story? Just because one of the things they mentioned on the Wikipedia was that the language is a little strong for Harper's.
Well, I'm a little embarrassed, but I did refer to the woman as a pig-faced cunt.
As a pig-faced cunt.
And I'm sorry. I know that we're living in an age where that's a terrible term.
Oh, Selena, do you need some water? I can see you.
I'm sorry.
Let me just drink this really quickly.
I'm not proud of that. I'm not
proud.
I'm sorry.
I have flashbacks to my high school days.
Lo siento.
Oh, did people say similar things to you in high school, Selena?
Well, people...
Lo siento.
They're really drinking that water.
Oh, God. So refreshing.
I'm sorry, Selena. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Well, people would hang dead pigs in my school all the time, like I said.
As was the tradition, of course.
Slaughterhouse.
And then they would write awful words on the pigs in blood. Sometimes it was fatty.
Oh, fatty. No.
Sometimes it was penis.
Oh, no.
A what?
Sometimes it was crap.
Sometimes crap.
And I don't know what those words mean, Jerry.
Because
the
again,
confusion.
English is not your first
the
language.
The confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That was horrible.
That must have been really upsetting. And I have to say, true to your word, Truman Capote, you did take the influence of Robert Frost when you were just when you're picking your insult for this woman, because it was very similar to what Robert Frost said to
it
you.
It was all he could think of.
Yeah, exactly.
But she really was pick face.
Wow, that is incredible. Now, I also wanted, before we get off the topic of Please. Breakfast at Tiffany's, you know, obviously very different, the movie and the book. One of the differences being Mickey Rooney and his extremely offensive Asian, I want to say Chinese, but it could be any, it's just really just generic Asian, you know, very offensive Asian character. What was your take at the time watching that? You're like, this isn't in the book. This isn't in the story at all.
It wasn't.
You know, why did you guys decide to add this really offensive Asian stereotype?
Oh, I did.
Oh,
I did.
You did.
I did write the script, didn't I?
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did.
I didn't know that. That was I didn't see it on Wikipedia.
I did.
Truman Capote, you tell me, man. I got
I'm
no
so
idea.
Sorry about this. Well, okay, I put in the character. I tried to make it more diverse. I'm a progressive person.
I see.
I did not have anything to do with the casting. Why didn't you cast an Asian actor?
So you had. So those were all the lines that you wrote, but you thought they would just get an Asian person
of
to deliver
course.
Them. It's so I much mean, less if, offensive listen, if you get an Asian person to do it.
Don't you think? Look, if I wrote a character named Catherine who's married to Timothy, you're probably going to assume they're going to cast a female as Catherine.
Yeah, probably.
I assume the same thing with my Asian character.
Wow, so it really was the casting department that was to blame.
Yes. Please. Yeah. I was terribly offended.
Okay, so let's move back over to Selena for just a moment. Now, I would be remiss if I did not bring up your untimely death.
Yes.
The tragic situation in which you died at the age of 23.
Fascinating.
In 1990, a woman named Yolanda Saldivar asked your dad if she could start a fan club for you. She then became the president of the fan club, the manager of your clothing stores, and also a close family friend. Now, she eventually embezzles $300,000 from you and your family. You go to her hotel room one night and ask her for the financial records. And again, the only person that was in the room were you and her. So this is her version of the story. So feel free to correct anything here. You ask her for the records. She pulls out a gun. You run.
Oh, my God.
She shoots you in the back.
No.
And you run through the hotel. They eventually get you to the hospital, but it nicked an artery, and then you eventually pass away. Now, is that, before I get to any of my questions, is that what happened in the hotel room? Were there any details that Yolanda left out?
That was very close, Jared. I appreciate you for bringing it up. But no, what happened was, you know, Yolanda was embezzling money, a good amount of money, and I go actually to the hotel with my father. And
oh, your father was there.
My father was there, yeah. And so to fire Yolanda, and he walk in and he goes, "How much money are you taking from me?"
Oh no!
And I go, Father, I think you mean for me. And he goes, hold on, I'm talking. And he goes, how much are you taking from me? And she looks at her shoes and she goes,
$25,000.
And he goes, did you just say
$25,000?
Please tell me you said $25,000. Look at me in the eye and lie to me and say that you took $25,000 away from me.
And did she?
And she goes, no, I cannot lie to you. And he goes, yeah, that's right, because you are lying.
Oh, no.
Because you know how much you're taking from me? $300,000.
The price of a gun.
From me. And he goes, you know what you can get with that money?
Oh, no.
And he pulls out the gun.
Oh, my God.
And he goes, I'll save you a trip to the store.
Oh, no.
Here's the money, and here's a gun for you. And he throws the gun at Yolanda.
So he paid himself for a gun that he gave to Yolanda. Your dad was really sticking
he
to
goes,
this shit.
He goes,
mental
get
illness
the
did he have?
Fuck out of my life.
Wow.
If I embezzle money here. If I need to find an embezzler, I'll look in a pool of my own piss. Oh,
my reflection.
At
my reflection in my own urine.
Yeah,
okay.
In my own urine, Yolanda. You understand that? And here's another clue. I'm not paying for the hotel room either, so you're going to have to come up with some money from that it's not from my daughter.
Wow.
And Yolanda,
insult to injury.
Yolanda enraged. And then my father goes, all right, Selena, now let's get the shit out of here.
Oh.
I'm tired. It smells like shit in here from a dirty embezzler.
And piss.
And I go, and piss. And my dad goes, oh, by the way, here's a little calling card. And he pulls the first blanket off her bed, pisses all over the bed.
Oh, my God.
He goes, you're going to have to pay the cleaner for that.
Oh, my
God. Maybe take up transcription work or something like that so
wow.
you can make some money to clean up the piss work.
So this woman.
And so then he goes, Selena, beautiful Selena, let's get the shit out of this fucking piss opium den. He opens the door. And Yolanda is standing there pointing a gun at my father.
That he gave
the
her.
Gun that he gave
the gun
her.
That he gave her.
That's
big
right.
Mistake.
The gun that he gave her. And he goes, oh, well, Yolanda, I'm so sorry. I'm so
out.
Sorry. Please, how much money do you want? I promise I'll give you whatever. Do you want me to drink my own piss? I'll do whatever you want.
Take Selena,
please. And then Yolanda goes, all I want is Selena. And my father goes, oh, fine. And he picks up Selena
and puts
me in front of mm-hmm. my father. And then she pulled the trigger.
Oh, horrible. My God.
Thankfully, I dodged it like the Matrix.
Oh. You dodged the bullet?
I can dodge. From years of dancing on stage, I've learned my body aerobics have gotten so good that I'm able to dodge.
Did you say like a beady beady bum bum?
I riffed. I knew the only thing. The only thing I knew how to get myself out of a tight jam was to beady beady bum bum riff. So I start dancing, oh beady beady bum bum, and I managed to dodge about 5 bullets here.
Oh, wow.
From jumping.
She is unloading the clip at you.
She was. She was just sort of firing aimlessly because she had never fired a gun before.
Mm-hmm.
And then
this is the first time she's had a gun.
The first time.
Your father.
Because my father gave her around 300,000 Dolores and a gun. And
you should have known better.
And, you really should have, yeah.
And Yolanda then, she has one more bullet left and she goes, Father, you better hold Selena or else I swear to Christ I'm going to come back and kill you one day. And then my father goes, message received, and and holds me stiff and then she shot me in the artery.
Wow. That's in the artery.
Hold you
in the artery.
Hold you stiff. That's horrible.
Wow, what an unbelievable turn
of
events.
So really, your father is culpable.
So your father, he's nowhere in the story. Nobody even saw him.
He should be in jail today.
Yeah, he must have just ran out the door after all this happened. Wow, that is an unbelievable story.
This would spark an investigation.
Yeah.
Well, he paid off, the producers at Paramount Pictures.
Oh, no.
He paid off the ghostwriter.
Hold on a second. So the people that wrote the movie Selena, based on your life, starring Jennifer Lopez...
Si.
Which, by the way, what a compliment to have
si.
Jennifer Lopez cast as
si.
You.
Beautiful.
The writers
Very
of that movie
hard.
Figured out the truth about your dad, and then your dad paid them off to get them to not put si. That in the movie?
Right. They ultimately all did die from gunshot wounds, too, because he had given them all guns as well.
I see. And, of
and
course,
so since everybody was dying from gunshots, nobody else really wanted to follow up on it for fear of death.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so,
no.
my story was lost, except now it's on your podcast.
Now everybody
Jack.
Knows the
I was
true story.
Say, this sounds like it could make for a good true crime novel.
Of Selena.
Si.
Wow, yeah, Truman Capote, you got to do.
Si. You never know.
And In Cold Blood 2, the
Selena.
Story of Selena's real
Selena's
death.
Selena's downfall.
Wow. Si.
You know what? We unfortunately, we have to wrap up very quickly.
Jared.
You know, and so, let's just all agree that
okay.
Truman Capote will write
okay.
his next book will be the true story of Selena's death.
In Cold Blood 2, Selena's downfall.
In Cold Blood Dose. Selena's
Gracias.
Downfall. And now, here's the thing. Some people have said, Truman Capote, that you made up some of the things in Cold Blood. Will you promise that will
shit.
Only be the truth in this version, in Cold Blood Dose?
Now that we know the truth, mm-hmm. it'll be completely factual.
100%. You promise, Truman Capote.
You have my word.
I'm going to hold you to this.
My
Scouts
word,
on Earth.
My
here.
Best word.
Because they said that you just put in some things in Cold Blood
Who
that just never
they?
Happened. A lot of people criticize you for this.
Please.
Yeah?
Jealous.
Yeah, so you're saying that In Cold Blood, the first one, is also 100% true.
Sure.
Okay, if you say so.
It was a hit.
That's as much truth as we need.
Exactly.
So yeah,
print the legend, Jared.
Print the legend.
Print the legend.
As I said, unfortunately, that is all the time we have for this week's episode. I'd like to thank my guests, Sherman Capote and Selena Perez, for joining me in the studio today.
Thank you.
Final question. I know it's a little weird. Do either of you have any podcasts or comedy shows or Twitter accounts that you're really big fans of that you want to tell people about? Selena, anything you want to tell people about?
Yes, Jared. I would like to plug a very special show called First Impressions at the Chelsea Music Hall on January 21st. It's going to be Jan Trowbridge, Yoni Lotan, and Taylor Ortega, who was recently in the Kim Possible live-action movie.
Oh, wow.
And they're putting on a three-person character, a dating show like Singled Out. You remember Singled Out?
I remember Singled Out.
So it's going to be nearly identical to Singled Out. And it's going to be very fun. It's going to have a bunch of your favorite New York City comedians in it and a famous celebrity singled guest.
Ooh.
So please come to that. It'll be beautiful.
Out.
And hang out with the cast afterwards, Jared.
Sherman Capote, anything you want to tell people about?
Yes, I love a radio show. It's right here on Radio Free Brooklyn. It's every Monday night from 10 until midnight. It's called The Next Best Thing, and it's hosted by Jonathan B. Lerner. And it's also a podcast. So when I miss the live episodes, I can listen to it as a podcast.
Sounds awesome. Go check that stuff out. I am, of course, your host, Jared Berenstein. You can check out all my stuff at jaredberenstein.com. Buy my book, The Kellyanne Conway Technique. Rate and review the podcast. If you're listening to this on radio, go find the podcast, rate and review. Also, you got to come check out, my improv team is retiring. And so if you want to come check out my improv team, Junior Varsity, we've been together for 12 years. Our final shows are going to be every Thursday in January 2019 at 7 p.m. at the Magnet Theater. You got to come check out those shows. Hit us up at famousdeadpeople@radiofreebrooklyn.org. We are here every Monday at 3 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.